This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. 45 years ago this summer, the nation was starting to learn about a break-in at Democratic National Committee headquarters at the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C. It was called a third-rate burglary, but a little more than 2 years later, Richard Nixon resigned the presidency. One of the key figures in the so-called Watergate scandal was Elliot Richardson. Tom Vance now works for the Kalamazoo Community Foundation. He first met Elliot Richardson as a student journalist from Western Michigan University in 1976. Vance is the author of Elliot Richardson, The Virtue of Politics. It was originally published in 2000. Thank you for being here, Tom.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
So first of all, let's go back and talk about how you developed such an interest. And I think if someone reads this book, it's fair to say an admiration for Elliot Richardson.
Right. A clear admiration. And I try to be objective. But I'm certainly a fan of his public service. So when I was at Western, All the President's Men came out in 76 when I was on the Western Herald. And all of us saw that movie many times. And Elliot Richardson was not a central figure in the movie, but it was clear that he was one of the heroes of a very traumatic political event. So he was in Benton Harbor that fall campaigning for Republican candidates. And Conrad Sutter, who was also on the Western Herald with me, we went and covered Elliot Richardson, and we met him. And I had just bought his book, and I was too chicken to take his book in to have Richardson sign it. But fortunately, Conrad had brought it in from the car without me knowing it. And he went up to Richardson and said, "Would you sign this for my friend?" So I had his copy of The Creative Balance, which was published in 76 when Richardson was the Commerce Secretary. And that sort of became my little repository of Elliot Richardson information over the years. So fast forward to in the early 1980s when my wife and I were in Germany when I was in the Army, I reread The Creative Balance and I wrote Richardson a letter. I don't know if he ever got it, but I sent it to him through the publisher. And I told him how much I admired his career. And I said, "I'm waiting for someone to write a biography of you. And if that doesn't happen, I'll have to do it myself," which was a pretty bold thing for a lieutenant in Germany that's just, you know, early in his career. So then fast forward to I'm in a graduate writing class here at Western. Brad Hayden, an amazing writer that was busy here at Western teaching people how to write even better. We were in this class, and he asked everybody what you would do if you didn't have to work for a living, like, you know, if you won the lottery and you could do anything you wanted to. And I said I'd like to write a biography of Elliot Richardson. And I guess my enthusiasm came through so much that Professor Hayden and everyone in the class said, like, "Oh, Tom, you need to do that somehow. You need to figure out a way to write a biography of Richardson." And, of course, I was working full-time at the Upjohn Company then, and I didn't have the time it took to do real serious research like the Library of Congress and everything. So I decided to write a book for children, you know, for young adults.
Yeah.
And I figured I could do that, and it could serve as an example of the next generation for politics. So I started doing that, and I got to meet Richardson the next summer in Washington and had an hour-long interview with him. And this goes a long way of saying what kind of person he was. I submitted 20 questions ahead of time. And when we sat down, he said, "Okay, you've got 20 questions here. Which three do you want to talk about?" And we had an hour. So I panicked and had to pick the three most central questions. And each one was answered by a 15-minute-long answer. So I kept working on it. And by 2000, I had a 35,000-word biography that the Council for Excellence in Government accepted, and they put online. And Richardson saw a draft of it in December, and he died the New Year's Eve 1999.
So when he became Attorney General, was it largely seen as somebody who had a very sterling reputation in Washington and someone who people trusted?
He did. And he was, when Nixon was brand new president, Richardson became his deputy secretary of state, the number two person at the State Department. And he did that. And then he was elevated to the head of health, education, and welfare, his first real cabinet position. And then when Nixon reorganized his administration, he wanted Richardson as the defense secretary. And Richardson didn't really want that. It's interesting, with Richardson's background, he was never very ambitious. He wanted to do great things, but he wasn't willing to do things necessary to do the great things. He just wanted to be tapped for his knowledge. He just wanted to serve. So he was happy.
When you say do the things necessary, you're sort of the political behind the scenes things of, to power plays and that sort of thing. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. When he clerked for Justice Felix Frankfurter, Frankfurter gave him some career advice that he always adhered to. And that was enjoy the job you're doing at the time for the sake of that job. And if you're always looking to position yourself for the next couple jobs in the future, then you're not really enjoying or focusing on your current job. And Richardson took that to heart. So he didn't really want to become Secretary of Defense. He was happy at HEW, but he went ahead and took that position. And then after 3 months as Secretary of Defense, President Nixon wanted him to become Attorney General. Watergate was starting to percolate at that point, and Richardson actually said no several times. And finally, Nixon insisted, and Richardson said, well, I have to serve the president. He was very loyal, and he was a loyal team player. So the only way he took the job as Attorney General, he sat down with the president, and he had to make sure the president was innocent of any wrongdoing. And President Nixon assured Richardson that he had known nothing about Watergate. And he said, you pursue this wherever it goes. Protect the presidency. Don't protect the president or the administration. So Richardson was convinced that Nixon was innocent, and he took the job. And this is something that doesn't come through in a lot of the Watergate coverage that your listeners are hearing now. Watergate wasn't going to be the biggest problem at this point. He was brand new Attorney General, and then he learns early into his job, the U.S. Attorney for Maryland contacts him and says, we've got a problem with the Vice President, Spiro Agnew.
Who had been governor of Maryland.
Had been governor of Maryland, and the U.S. Attorney for Maryland had discovered that as governor of Maryland, Spiro Agnew was possibly involved with kickbacks, bribes, and tax evasion. And then they found out that it actually continued when he became vice president. And as things developed over the summer of 1973, when it became obvious that President Nixon probably would not survive as president, Richardson had to get Agnew to resign so he could be replaced by a new vice president so there'd be someone in charge when Nixon might be forced out of office. This was Richardson's summer of 1973.
How did Elliot Richardson come to know Archibald Cox? And people who are deep into the Watergate history know that those two names will always be synonymous and linked together, but linked to the Watergate story.
Right. Archie Cox was Richardson's law professor at Harvard. They hadn't been friends, but he'd never really lost track of Archibald Cox. And actually, Archie Cox had given Richardson some career advice also when Richardson was climbing up the ladder. And actually, as you can imagine, there weren't a long list of people who wanted to become special prosecutor. Richardson had a hard time finding reputable people who would do that, so Archie Cox was not his first choice. But he was a good choice, and he'd been Solicitor General. He was a Democrat, and that's something that President Nixon didn't really approve of the selection of Archie Cox. But throughout the summer, Richardson and Cox worked together. Cox would be trying to investigate the Watergate crisis. The White House would constantly push back. Richardson would get calls from Alexander Haig, who was Nixon's chief of staff, or from Nixon himself, and say, tell Cox to back off. And when Richardson went in front of his Senate confirmation hearings to be Attorney General, the Senate made Richardson promise that he would appoint a special prosecutor and that only Richardson could fire the special prosecutor, and that could only be for extraordinary improprieties. And so Richardson had that commitment to the Senate. So as the summer progressed, it became obvious that Richardson was probably not going to survive in his job if he was going to honor his promise to the Senate. And finally, things came to a head on October 20th, where the president wanted Cox fired, and Richardson met with him several times with the president and with Cox. He just wasn't able to fix it, and so he resigned. And then the president ordered William Ruckelshaus, who was the number two at Justice, the deputy attorney general. Ruckelshaus resigned too. And then it fell to Robert Bork, who was the number three person at the Justice Department.
And this is what is known as the Saturday Night Massacre.
Right.
When we had three attorneys general in the United States on the same day, two people refusing to fire the special prosecutor. Is it fair to say that that is one of the major turning points in Watergate, where we move from the idea of a third-rate burglary to this is obstruction of justice, these are the sort of things that merit impeachment and the discussion of impeachment in Congress of a sitting president?
It really did turn the tide with the public. When Elliott resigned, 3 million telegrams, this was back when people sent telegrams before people could tweet or send emails, 3 million telegrams were sent to Washington, D.C. in support of Richardson and Ruckelshaus and in support of Archie Cox. So I think it was, and even Republican leaders then, Richardson had so much credibility. He didn't like labels, but he considered himself a moderate. But he was seen as a key figure in the liberal wing of the Republican Party, which you don't even hear about anymore, which is an oxymoron now, right? Or it's a paradox. But so he had so much credibility that by him resigning, that was the firestorm that started the whole series of, it was apparent that the House was going to vote for impeachment and that the Senate would go along with the impeachment. And so Nixon resigned.
So let's now draw some parallels cautiously between Elliot Richardson and the Watergate investigation in present day. And I say cautiously because it is dangerous to start talking about things that could result in the removal of the president from office when at this point there is simply an investigation and charges have not been leveled. But there are a couple of interesting things to note here. One of them, of course, being that the FBI director was fired by President Trump and that at least some people in the Trump administration have floated the idea that special counsel Robert Mueller, who has been on the job a relatively short period of time, could be removed. When you see that and you think of Elliot Richardson, what comes to your mind?
Well, there are a lot of perils too.
Maybe,
actually,
yeah.
The Nixon White House was exhibiting a lot of paranoia, and the Nixon White House thought it was us and them. And when Richardson first joined the Nixon administration, in his first conversation with President Nixon, he said, "You've won by a huge margin, and there is no they. Everybody in the country, even people who voted against you, want you to succeed." And Nixon never really understood that, and there could be some parallels with the current administration that feels it's under siege. The press, Nixon was always attacking the press, as did Vice President Agnew. And of course, we know the press were the good guys with Watergate, with Woodward and Bernstein and the greatest American reporting ever. There was something, though, that Richardson said after Watergate when he would talk about it. And again, your listeners need to know, he never badmouthed President Nixon. He never spoke ill of him at all. And Richardson said, you know, the system worked. For as traumatic as Watergate was to the American public, the system worked. And it wasn't pleasant, but it worked. The three branches of government, the balances of power, in the end, they all worked. And the only thing I can say to speculate for this current situation is I think our system is built to handle whatever we throw at it. And hopefully our balance of power will make everything settle.
Tom Vance's book, Elliot Richardson, The Virtue of Politics, was originally published in 2000. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Gordon.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.